On today's episode, oh, it's a good one. We talk about MLS Cup Final. LA Galaxy, you stopped us from having a bad day. Thank you so much. Plus, in the third act, we talk a little bit about the Premier League because a lot of stuff happened. None of it was Arsenal scoring a goal from open play, but we talk about it.
And we're also joined by an incredible guest, Kelly Nascimento. You may also know her as Pele's daughter. We talk about his legacy, all the work that she's doing in football. A really, really amazing and awesome conversation that you what you and us, we all will appreciate. So tune in.
Went to a diner with a couple of friends, a couple of comedian friends.
Okay.
And we were by far the loudest table in the whole place.
Pretty standard.
But here's what I'll say. That's not okay at a restaurant, but that is okay at a diner, no?
Depends on the time.
Doesn't matter the time. Don't worry about
just
the time.
Loud at the diner.
Don't worry about the time. Diner is a place where you could just kind of be yourself, right?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I can't imagine being at a diner late, people are drunk, and then also making a complaint to anybody. That would be.
Oh, yeah.
That'd be ridiculous.
Late, yeah. It was fairly late, but I don't think it matters.
It's on me that I'm there. You know what I mean?
Who's going to be at 3 p.m. at a diner? It's a little louder. You know what I mean? You're at a diner.
Okay. I don't know. My grandparents. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's okay. People were giving us looks. You know, there was a lot of older people there.
Gotcha.
We were having a good time. So sorry that you no longer have a good time while your friends are dead, okay? We were having a good time.
Was it a table of loud black teenagers on the subway? What's going on?
One of us did yell Showtime. So I think that might have ruined the mood. But we were just talking about movie TV channels.
All right, lovely. Glad
you agree.
We got to get... I do agree. Look at that. We found some...
Neutral ground.
What's good, everybody? Welcome to the Cooligans. We got to get right to it today because we got a big show. My name is Christian Polanco.
I'm Alexis Guerrero.
We're here on...
Hit it a couple times, bro. Now, go, bang, 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 bang. Show them how you got it. Okay. It's crazy. It's crazy.
I got a couple scripts.
Oh,
right?
Man, if this guy was single, a lot of y'all would be in trouble. I'm just saying.
But welcome to the show, everybody, here on Yahoo Sports. We have to talk about a lot of things. We have to also mention our incredible guest today because we are joined by the one and only Kelly Nascimento.
Incredible.
You may recognize the last name Nascimento. That's a little familiar. Right? There's a very famous footballer that has that name.
That's right. Lionel Messi Nascimento, bro.
Pele.
The original Messi, bro. Pele.
Pele.
Pele's daughter.
Pele's daughter. Pele's eldest daughter.
Marouan Chamakh Nascimento, bro.
Wow.
I can't believe he got his daughter.
The Pele knew even back then. So we're going to be talking to her in just a little bit about. The work that she does in football, human rights, a lot of other things. And we'll talk about her dad a little bit.
Yeah, we get into it.
I know y'all are really going to appreciate this combo.
The insight into her pops is crazy.
Exactly. So we'll get to that. But before that, we have to talk about the Major League Soccer Cup that happened Saturday, December 7th, 4 p.m. Eastern time, 1 p.m. Pacific.
Bro. Think about it. Ricky Pooch was so excited he got front row seat. So I don't even want to play, but I want to see it.
Ricky Pooch said, I'm taking the day off.
Yeah, so I need to see it with my own eyes.
Okay, see what I built.
I can't be in there all with all players running around me.
So we all saw the result. 2-1, LA Galaxy win their 6th MLS Cup.
First to 6. Hey, congrats to Will Koontz, a guest on this show.
I'm just saying, you know.
Hooligans bump, baby. Rebels didn't send us nobody.
So LA Galaxy went 2-1 against New York Red Bulls.
And the memes.
I am currently wearing an LA Galaxy.
You've been a fan. Been a fan. Full 90 minutes.
Okay. Dude, Saturday, I mean, desde La Cuna, been supporting. My club in Carson. I can't stand it when people keep highlighting that we play in Carson.
L.A. County, okay? It counts,
it is still
baby.
Los Angeles, okay? How many times do I have to say? I say it all the time on this show.
Yeah.
I hate that I have to keep reminding people.
I remember when you and I helped recruit Marco Royce, because this is what we do.
Exactly. Look, we weren't really loud about it.
No. We haven't told y'all diddly squat, okay? Because we're not here to flex. It's a comedy show.
Exactly. You think we need clout? We don't need clout.
Please. Please. We got so much credibility. We valid without the check.
I mean, I would like a check from time to time.
Yeah. We verify without the blue check, then. We'll say that way.
Okay.
But yes, obviously, LA Galaxy win. The first team ever to win 6 MLS Cups.
Uh-huh.
Some of the previous ones were in a different era, but this one in particular, coming from the season they had previous, which was not great. I don't even think they made the playoffs, if I'm not mistaken, to absolutely bodying the entire Western Conference. To now, I mean, running through them playoffs. And obviously, they didn't go up against the toughest competition in the East, right? Red Bull did a really good job of making their way through the playoffs.
Sure.
But not the top seed. In fact, I think if they had their points on the West Coast, they wouldn't even have made the playoffs. So I think you saw that gap. You saw that dearth in quality. Right, you know what I mean?
So, I mean, let's talk about some of the kind of main points from the game, which were... obviously, Ricky Puig not being there, but then also, and probably even more of an impact, is Andres Reyes not playing in this game.
Yeah, Reyes is
center back. Yeah. who scored the lone goal against Orlando City, a very, very important player for the Red Bulls, and him he became a scratch during warm-up because they said he was sick, which I don't know. It's something. I heard that the player I forgot his name, the one who took his spot, Elie, I forgot his name.
Noah Ile, I think is
the way it's pronounced. But apparently he found out 5 minutes before.
All right. Suit up, kid.
Before he's supposed to play or that he's supposed to start, that he's starting. And I think that was noticeable in those first, they scored in those first goals in the first, 17 minutes?
Yeah.
Those two goals. And it felt like, he's clearly not ready, not settled,
right?
Because especially the Jovetic goal was the one where it felt like he's not sure. I don't want to foul, and then it leads to a goal,
right?
Whatever.
A tough position, especially when you consider defending was Red Bull's strong suit,
right?
So in those first few minutes, all of a sudden you go down 2-0. I feel like they did sort of get back into the game. Obviously, a set piece was another danger thing for them. They score off of a quarter kick, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. It was a scramble. I mean, LA Galaxy have also been terrible this season on set pieces.
They just can't clear the ball,
they
man.
They can't clear the ball. The ball that got to Dylan Nealis was a... I think it was like a
guy kicked his leg up sideways. It looked like a pass.
Yoshida was the one who... He tried to clear the ball with like a back heel... the ball's in the air. Yeah. And he's back heeling it.
Like a karate, like one of those kicks where you kick someone in the jaw
with the back of your foot.
It was kind of like that.
And it's just like, but it was like three or four.
It did not do the job. It went right to Nealis, who, I mean, look, this is one of the things Red Bull does really well. They crowd the box and they have players surrounding it.
Yeah.
And if the ball gets loose, they're going to take a shot on goal. And then maybe it parries and then someone's waiting there. And it worked for them. And it kind of made it a little sticky there, 2-1. Because LA Galaxy decided to play like, well, what happens if we just give Red Bull the ball? What are they going to do with it?
Yeah. The second half, definitely there was a lot more pressure. But the two goals in the first half were enough to get it done. Emil Forsberg hits the post in that second half. And there was just the LA Galaxy... I wasn't necessarily like thinking, oh, they're going to hold on. They're going to lock it down.
No, defensively, they were a little wobbly. But... I mean, Yoshida, obviously, incredible, but everyone else leaves a lot to be desired. But
sure. I thought
Fagundes probably didn't have the greatest game, but Fagundes I thought was really good off the bench. In particular, for me, I think Delgado and Brugman, bro.
Brugman. Yeah, I mean.
That one pass Brugman just perfectly laid off. It's like the spirit of Ricky Pujol's face.
Paintel, he got that ball to Paintel, but Gaston Brugman I thought had a spectacular game. The decision to... start him instead of Diego Fagundes.
Yeah,
it was clearly the right choice.
I think
you knew
Diego Fagundes would have a good impact off the bench, and he certainly did.
Uh-huh.
Probably not the biggest impact, but Brugman starting. Where did that come from? He got player of the match.
He took ownership of the game. He was like, okay, I'm replacing Ricky Puig. I'm going to do the things Ricky Puig might do. He wasn't picking up the ball from the goalkeeper and running it down. He wasn't doing that.
But if you give him space, he was making good passes. Yeah, he was getting the ball to the final third.
That was kind of the surprising thing that I thought the midfield for the Galaxy kind of, especially in the first half, really ran things against a Red Bull team that you don't really expect that
from.
They were
dictating the game, which I don't think we all expected that, because it seems like Red Bull really packs that midfield.
Yeah, and then also Mickey Yamane, the right back, was also pretty incredible.
Yeah, all over the place.
Making some important stops. Carlos Garces running back, late challenges, just getting the ball.
Because there were some breakaway opportunities for Rebel. There was a lot of transition game.
100%. And then I did love the Joseph Pinto got a great goal. But I loved this is from Justin Rudderman. Speaking to Pinto in the locker room. Have you seen this? I don't think you've seen this.
I have not.
And this is it's kind of a funny his response about the Red Bull. I think during the week, during MLS Cup media week or whatever, they were talking about like the Red Bull's high press and stuff like that. And this was Joseph Pinto's response about the high press. Let me see if I got the right moment.
It was great. I know they are happy. Their spirit was with me. Like I said, my twin sister also made a good part of my life now. He made the decision also. I made the decision. And as you can see, the decision was a great season, was a great decision. So yeah, I cannot say much, but all I would say is thanks to God for making all this thing possible.
A couple days ago, you invited New York Red Bulls to try and press you, and you said you would get in behind. That's exactly what you did for your goal.
Yes, I need to. I want them, but they never listen. So if you don't listen, this is what is going to happen, because already I knew they were afraid. They were afraid, especially the first moment when I was running behind them. They were a little bit shaking because they didn't know how to handle and all these kind of things. But as you can see, they should keep always coming. Like I said, there's always space behind them.
Time to sing a little blessing.
And that's it.
I want to correct something. He says, I want, you know, brackets, Red Bull. I think he says, I warn them. I warned them.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. All right.
Yeah, I heard him say, I warned them.
I mean,
and
it still
they don't
kind
listen.
Of makes sense, both of them. Yeah.
Yeah. But they don't listen. Yeah, I told them, you pressed me, there's going to be room space behind. And there was. But he said it so matter of fact. He's like, I tried to tell him, and then you saw there was space behind.
Which is, he says it in such a matter of fact way, which you just love to hear any athlete with this level of confidence.
Yeah.
But just the, like, I saw they were afraid. I saw, like, even you win a title and you're given, you know, post match interviews, and you're even talking about the other team and saying, yeah, they were afraid.
Yeah.
I mean, it not only is it's slightly, I'm not even going to say it's necessarily disrespect, but it's like, it's not even, he's not even saying it in a disrespectful way. He's just like, yeah, this is what happened. They were afraid. And I'm going to, this is his opinion that they were afraid.
Right.
But actually, if I had to, run side by side Joseph Pinto, I'm probably gonna be a little bit nervous. I'm gonna be a little bit shaky and concerned. Yeah, yeah. But he's just
I've been giving him a lot of space. I'd be staring back, bro.
So there's something that tells me that the Galaxy went into this game with just an incredible amount of confidence, where they just saw.
But also tactically, they were very smart. Greg Vanney was like, I wonder what this team does if they can't press. If you have the ball, you can't press.
Right.
So what if we give them the ball? What happens then? How do they play out of that?
But that's a bold thing to say from a Galaxy team that does not defend that well.
No, but I think they were understanding that, like, okay, we may not be the best defensive, but we may be able to handle them if they're sort of unsure of what to do. Yeah. And I think you saw, for the most part, their best opportunities for attack were dead ball situations and counters.
Yeah.
But you can't counter if you already have the ball. You're already here, bro.
Exactly. And Pinto was great, but we also got to give some props to Gabriel Peck.
Yeah, who's already being rumored with moves to Europe, bro.
But the how many nutmegs did he complete in this game?
Oh my god. Does that just do we keep that stat?
I don't know if there's a stat out on FOTMOB.
The little triangles that they had on that side were crazy. But
the moment in that has happened midfield where they nutmegged John Tolkien twice.
Yeah.
Which is like again.
Which I think is on purpose because I think in the pregame or at some point in media day, he said he wanted to like kick the crap out of
yeah,
him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I remember that.
And he was like, all right, watch what I'm gonna do, bro. They it's went crazy.
They went after the young man.
Yeah, okay. Bro.
Dude, yeah, they look, the second half the game was tense. It wasn't necessarily exciting. And it look, let's keep it a buck. I mean, a lot of NYCFC fans are watching, hate watching.
There's a man wearing an LA Galaxy shirt. You think we noticed, dude?
But the one thing that was interesting, I think, of the whole discourse, and even when LAFC won, Galaxy fans, get their jokes off and get their either pettiness or LAFC fans vice versa. It's part of the game.
It's part of the game.
Exactly.
When your ops lose, you also celebrate.
And NY New York City FC on Instagram posted this image that we're looking at, just the star above the crest.
I said posting for absolutely no reason at all.
And that's what the caption said, posting for absolutely no reason at all. I also I tweeted this this GIF,
which funny enough, we are just outside the shot to the left of this.
Exactly. Of Ronnie Dyla doing naked push-ups in front of the MLS Cup.
Mostly naked. My man wears tiny shorts by the way under his pants.
The tiniest of
very European
of trunks. But this was a
But go scroll down because I want you to see the people. Tati Castellanos.
Yeah.
Who won an MLS Cup that day of what you posted.
Yes, yes.
He's in there with the he. Go below him. Hey, Eber.
Eber is there. Everybody's just kind of reminiscing.
Right.
About how great it was to win that MLS Cup.
Yeah.
Nobody's really saying anything about any other.
There's no reason. for some reason, because MLS Cup reminded us that we had won it in 2021.
Exactly. This is a thing where, I think we obviously have friends that are Red Bulls fans.
How about this? I have a friend who is a Jets fan.
Okay.
Tottenham Hotspur fan. Red Bull fan. What a horrific.
What a weekend.
Yeah. The only thing cool about him is that he's married to an absolutely wonderful friend of ours.
Okay, okay.
And he's a great guy. But that's his fan base. I did not text him. I'm good for it. He was at the game on Saturday. I didn't text him Saturday. I didn't rub no salt in the wound. I'm going to give my man some time.
It's not personal. It should never be personal.
But Sunday when Tottenham lost, I hit him up and I said, how you doing? How you feeling, bro?
You good? Yo, I know a good therapist. Yo,
talk to me about why you might not want to be a soccer fan moving forward, bro.
Dude, look, it's a couple things in the big picture of MLS Cup. One of the funny things that happened was that Lionel Messi posted about, I think he did an Instagram story telling people to watch MLS Cup. Which
got a nice bonus off that.
you know, out of all the money he's ever made in his life, this was the dollar that he's like, I don't even want to accept this money. Okay,
bro, I don't need it.
I don't want to. So it speaks to the fact that Messi realistically has to be an ambassador during his time for MLS, and he has to.
He is it without saying anything, but if the fact that he's also saying something's kind of cool.
The other thing was Messi won MVP.
Yeah. The
Landon Donovan MVP award, which is amazing.
Pretty cool.
The MVP winner is supposed to do like a press conference and like a whole proper thing. He did not do that. They did a presentation with the Inter Miami Academy.
Mm-hmm.
So it just leads me to believe that Messi is on a grind of like, the fact that we lost makes me,
I want to be a part of your family.
I want to do anything now. And you could tell
that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. I'm
willing
even,
to accept that.
I'm not necessarily knocking it. But the, you know, it speaks to like, yo, we lost. Now I get to go away for until preseason right. and stuff
until
like that.
Until my homie takes over as manager.
So the it just seems like the next year, Garber did the state of the league mm-hmm. thing. A couple things. The U.S. Open Cup will have more teams than before. The Leagues Cup format might change. We haven't even brought this up yet on the show, but the after the World Cup, the MLS might go to the European calendar, the regular FIFA calendar. Mm-hmm. So it just seems like this, even with the culmination of this MLS Cup and having Dax McCarty, who now seems to be, he might be an official full-time person working for MLS season pass and stuff like that. So it's starting to feel like we're going to see a few changes in this league. Is there any, we can just talk about just, now that the season is over, our thoughts on it or looking
on
back.
On the season?
This was the second Apple season or whatever. But I just want to wrap this up as far as like how the MLS season went and how we feel about it and stuff like that.
I mean, I'm a big fan of no geo-blocking. I think that's the first and foremost. The fact that wherever I go, I can put on an MLS game and I don't have to find some sketchy stream in another country or figure out a way to watch it, or in our case, convince a pub to let us downstairs in Manchester to watch a game with the audio.
Yes.
Because there was nothing happening upstairs, but God forbid. So in those types of moments, it's kind of cool to be able to do that. Also, I feel like the league is so big. There's so many teams. Mm-hmm. It's almost impossible to keep track of it. I'm glad that, the league is at least considering moving to a fall schedule. I hope they consider like a dual table or maybe like an apertura clausura type thing, because there's going to need to be a break in the middle.
Yeah.
So maybe there's like a mini MLS Cup in the first half and a mini MLS Cup in the second half. Or maybe it's just balanced schedule so the teams don't play each other. Mm-hmm. Balanced schedule for both. Winners of those play each other at the end for the Liguilla, you know what I mean? The real...
Like the Liga MX style.
Yeah, Liga MX style.
Yeah, yeah.
Something of that nature, something that makes it a little bit easier, not just on the fans who travel, and I know New York fans want to see LA teams and play each other and all that, so it's not perfect, but a little something easier for travel and for, away support would be nice. But, look, any league with Messi in it, it's going to be a Messi-oriented league. You know, mm-hmm. you can't even league on... Like, I'm sure someone at Nantes was like, how come nobody's talking about us? And it's because, you got, Messi and Mbappe and Neymar up there playing in Paris. So I don't think it's our own issues, but it's nice. It's, you got to use Messi while you have him. You got to get the most you can out of him marketing wise, because every team is pitching in to pay this guy for Inter Miami to have him. So I'm cool with it. But at the same time, it's nice to see that other teams and other players are getting opportunities to shine. And if there's more eyes on the league, that means they're shining even harder. So I'm happy with the way things have gone.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, this season, again, this second Apple season, it's felt, when you talk about geo-blocking, the counter argument sometimes is like putting does a paywall limit how many people can actually,
and it definitely
it does.
Limits what bars are willing to put it on.
As a diehard who's going to watch regardless of where it's being broadcast, I do appreciate the ease of just like turning the app on and boom, and watching whatever game. So even so, from as a fan watching at home to a fan like going to games, there's clearly been progress and improvement, and then the players are getting paid more. I feel like we're seeing even that.
The sport's growing like crazy.
Or even just the quality of the player that's lower on the depth chart is still pretty good. So
there are some teams that need to catch up, though.
Oh, without a doubt.
Not every team is doing that.
But still, I mean, the ones I'm watching, I mean, if I'm watching it, it's probably because it's a decent team. But overall, it felt like Messi not, and Inter Miami not going further in the playoffs is probably, I'm going to take, even though I loved the story of, you know, Atlanta winning and, you know, yes, that was cool. But I, as just a fan, I'm like, I still would have wanted to see Messi get a little further. And
yeah.
Yeah. Just like even, I think Messi losing in the MLS Cup final is a bigger story than losing in that first round.
Well, they would have hosted it.
Oh, sure, sure.
So that would have been a little bit tough for me to see them lose.
Sure, sure. But I think that part of it was just like a little,
that's going to be the storyline next year. They didn't win it last year.
Exactly, yeah. And we're going to see how they, there's also like a new, I forgot, Garber announced it on the broadcast of like a Drive to Survive type of show, like an F1 show for MLS. I think it's either starting soon or something like that. I forgot what it's called. But yeah, overall, congrats to the LA Galaxy. Sixth MLS Cup title. Look, entertaining game. And yeah, Ricky Puig is now, I imagine probably going to get surgery this week. And he is going to be out until you figure probably what, August, September at the earliest. So a bummer, but you know, he comes back and who knows what the LA Galaxy are like then. Who knows what the next season is going to look like? I don't know if we have any early favorites. NYCFC are looking for a coach. Did you hear this? I don't know how accurate this is at all. This is all completely alleged.
You talking about Philly?
Yeah.
I heard this too.
I don't know how I... But that Jim Curtin is a potential to be the next coach for NYCFC.
Hey, brother, the coach of NYCFC might be a Patreon member of ours.
Which would be pretty wild.
Oh, that would be
And it really just speaks to the other coach in MLS. Why haven't you joined the Patreon? Right? Patreon.com/soccercool.
You wonder why you're not getting the call.
So that's on you. That ain't even on us. All right. But fun season.
Also, all jokes aside, congratulations to Rebel for a season you probably didn't think you were going to have.
Sure. Yeah. And I'm seeing the tweets back and forth between fans. Mm-hmm. Some people are being quite egregious about it. But it is what it is. This is the banter. If NYCFC lost in 2021, what would happen?
Please, are you kidding me?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it is what it is. This is the nature of the game, and we're here to have some fun with it. Best of luck to everybody next season. Yeah. All right. We have to get to our conversation with the daughter of Pele, Kelly Nascimento, and we'll talk. I mean, yeah, this is going to be seriously one of the. We already spoke to her, but I can just say before it was an absolute honor and not only is she just really great at what she does and she's a
great person.
Great person and does incredible work, but she just tells great stories about Pele that I've never heard before, and I'm pretty sure a lot
There's
of people.
There's some really good anecdotes in there.
So we had a great time talking to Kelly. We had a very, very long conversation as well. So the full convo is gonna be on our Patreon, which you can get right now, patreon.com/soccercooligans. This part in on the podcast is a short conversation of a much longer one that is again we were honored to have and super super cool. She again told some incredible stories about her dad and all the work that she's doing. So go join the Patreon, patreon.com/soccercooligans, for that full interview and for other exclusive content. So let's get to it. Here's our conversation with Kelly Nascimento.
Wow, dude.
Okay.
We got legends on legends on legends that come through this door.
Something I just feel, there's certain where I feel like I have to be on my best behavior. I don't know what it is.
Yo, same. We're like, wait, there's respectable people in this building all of a sudden.
I cleaned before she came here.
Oh, dude, I brushed my teeth and my wife's like, bro, it's not the new year yet. And I said, no, you don't understand. We have a very special guest. Also, why do you put up with this?
I mean, hygiene should be a bare minimum, but, you know, sometimes people make compromises.
Yeah, you know what? I just don't believe in science. no, but this is an absolute honor. Someone we had the luxury of meeting and interacting with in the dark days when it was always Zoom.
Yes.
The first time we're actually getting to be physically in the same room together.
Exactly. And we've been crossing paths through the last couple of years at different events. And the more we've gotten to know her, it has been just seeing the work that she's doing.
Mm-hmm. Doing good for the world.
Okay. The complete opposite of what we're doing.
So, the antithesis.
So I'm absolutely honored to be joined by the one and only Kelly Nascimento. Kelly, what's up?
Thank you, guys.
What's going on, Kelly?
That's awesome. What a great intro.
No problem.
Happy to have.
So I just wanted to start this because I didn't want to introduce you simply as this is Pelé's daughter, because I imagine that is.
But you are.
Yeah. You are Pelé's eldest child.
It's not. It's actually, people always ask, you know, is it okay? Like, you've done so much. Everyone right. is so kind. They're always yeah. like, you've done so much on your own. Yeah, you've done so much on your own, you know, like, but honestly, like, it is awesome. I think it's great. And he's done, you know, he's changed the world so that I could mouth off and people would listen. In a way. Right, that's right. how I nice. See it. You know what I mean?
It's an interesting,
it's,
yeah.
It's like an honor without you having had to do anything. You
know exactly. What I mean? Like, yeah. I did nothing.
As someone who grew up without a father, can I just say I'm Pelé's son?
Please do. There's so many of us.
So we should start there because...
my siblings?
Yeah. No.
Bring them all out.
I just want to ask this because I'm curious. Are you tired? Do you get tired of talking about your father?
No.
Okay.
No.
So it sounds like, and from when I hear you speak about him and from just really everything people say about him, I read his autobiography as well. And there's clearly a sense of pride in anyone sort of in his orbit of like, you know, I'm sure people have negative things to say. Everybody has negative things to say about somebody.
Yeah,
but
of course.
There is something to the aura, what he has done.
Aura is a good word.
Not solely in like on the pitch, you know, everything he's done for humanitarian efforts and just bringing awareness. And clearly those parts of him are in you as well.
Well, I hope so.
Yeah,
but, I also hope it's not. I mean, listen, I'd say a lot of everything probably is in me. And I think he benefited a lot from not having been in sort of, you know, the cell phone generation. I'm sure all the people
of
then,
course,
you know,
yeah.
Media
so
really
like, yeah, so I don't want to sort of, I don't know. I don't, I hate the idea of like sanctifying him, you know what I mean? Because
right.
he did a lot of crazy dumb shit, you know,
yeah,
like,
mm-hmm.
and, but I think that for the most part, yeah, I think he was pretty, you know, I don't know. I think it has to do with time, you know, where the stars and the moon were and, you know, the age that he came in, you know, the country that he came from,
right.
You know, what was going on in the country when he started becoming famous, you know, what was going on in the world when he, so yeah, there are, for the most part, the things that people say about him are really wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I was shocked. I remember the first time I saw the movie documentary about his life, I was sitting in the dentist chair and they have those TVs. And it was on Netflix. I was like, oh, let me watch that. I'm going to be here for the next hour. And, you know, the way it's portrayed is that, like, you know, he sort of knocked down some of the pillars of racism in the country by getting an opportunity to play and how he chose to play. And at the time, I remember, like, I grew up around a bunch of Brazilians. I didn't see one white dude. You know what I mean? Like, we were all like, probably I'm like, I can't even imagine racism at that time. So it's like, it felt like his influence spanned across so many generations that by the time you got to the last one, you forgot how much good he did in the first one.
Yeah. And it's interesting because in Brazil, he often gets, especially with like the last like 20 years of his life, he would often get a lot of flack for not speaking up against racism, like not being more of a Vinny.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Who I love and is amazing.
Right.
But the truth is he was born in 1940. Like he was not Vinny. Like he only was able to do what he did because he shut up about it. Right,
right
at the time,
yep,
different
right?
time.
So he, So I think that the thing that what you just said is so true. But he did it all sort of almost inadvertently, and almost by barreling through so much of the racism and focusing on the football.
Right.
You know, which is not, it's a very different brand than today. And I think Vinny is incredible. And I think people who tell Vinny to shut up are ridiculous because there's no way to shut up right now. And there should never have been. But I mean, he started playing during a military dictatorship. It wasn't. you know, people compare him a lot in Brazil. People like to compare him to Muhammad Ali.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's right? A big comparison.
Yeah. And they say that, you know, compared to Muhammad Ali, he didn't do a lot of, you know, social justice stuff. And so, you know, and what I like to say is that you have to look, which I think the more interesting, cooler thing about it is to sort of get beyond the sort of who they were and go to where they came from. Mm-hmm. And the societies and cultures that created them, right? Like, I think that my father, had he had a Nation of Islam, had he had Malcolm X,
mm-hmm.
you know, supporting him, you know, like making his activism flourish, teaching him, he probably would have been a completely different person. But he didn't, you know, he had a lot of threats. He had a lot of fear.
He had a lot of his own.
Yeah. And he had to do it without talking about it much if he wanted to do it.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so I think it's like, I don't take anything away from Muhammad Ali. I think he definitely had a more activist spirit to begin with than my dad did. I'm not saying that they were the same person and, you know, but a very different scenario, right?
Very
a country that was oppressive, but a democratic country mm-hmm. and a country that was a military run country. You
right.
know?
And Pelé started playing professionally at 15.
Yes.
So clearly, I mean, that is, the amount of pressure, yeah. and not only just to be a professional footballer, but then as soon as maybe when he's like 21, 22 and is now dealing with huge questions about whether it's, you know, I remember talking about either supporting the dictatorship or supporting when there was a regime change. And there was a lot of like,
right.
I mean, that's just so much essentially for a child. There's a little bit of. Like, yes, he was naive, but it made total sense for his age.
And he was 15 in 1955.
Right.
Right. And he was 8 when he stopped going to school so he could go to work.
Just, yeah.
Right. Wow. And it's in the country. Era. Yeah. And there was, how many, like 5 TVs at the time?
I'm kidding.
But really, right? Like, you know, and he was taken by people to another city, another state to play at 15, which at that time, it's not like today where you can FaceTime your parents, right? So I think, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. It was a crazy, right?
Yeah. Dearest mother.
Yes.
Well, obrigado for the snacks.
Wow, you just, it's like he's in the room with us, Alexis.
Oh my God. Am I reminding you of your father?
A little bit.
One of the things that was like, you know, speaking about racism and just race in general, one of the moments in his book were about traveling with Santos I think that he went to play games in like Sweden or something like that. And he talked about how white women looked at him and talked about him. And they sort of deified like there was something interesting to like, I think there's a combination of like being around people that probably never been around black people.
Right.
And then also being a young, famous footballer and all these women are...
And incredible at what you do. Yeah, yeah. Be also being famous.
So I think that clearly is a factor of like, you know, how to navigate race. Because I think he's kind of learning about it at the time as well.
You know, it's really interesting. I don't know because I actually never talked about that part with him that far back. I think that I don't even know if he thought about race per se and navigating race. I honestly thought that a lot of what he was doing was just surviving.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Really?
Just like navigating the day-to-day of like the absolute whirlwind that, you know, because my grandmother tells this really cool story about when he won the first World Cup and then he came home, right, to their little house in Bauru. And she talks about how for almost 48 hours, there was a line that was blocks long of people coming to say hi to him and coming, you know, and she would just keep giving them coffee and some of them would crash on her couch because there was no infrastructure for fame.
Yeah.
Right.
So finally her neighbor after like 28, like a day and a half called the police department and he's like, you guys have to come do something. This lady's going to collapse. Like there are people sleeping in her living room.
Right.
The line is still like people coming in just to say hi to him. So the police finally was like, okay, maybe we'll come and help her out. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's the world he was in. Like there was no, he had no preparation. Like if you think about.
Global fame was so new.
Yeah. And there was no one in Brazil like
him. Who was
him.
It? Him, Amelia Earhart. Who else was there?
Yeah. And also it was.
And nobody could fly her.
You know, she's, if only she wasn't lost, she could fly him out of.
The ridiculous.
But yeah, I mean, it's true. It was like nobody in Brazil was that. And it's football, right?
Right.
So people were like passionate, you know, and it was the middle of a dictatorship. So people were very emotional, you know, and everything was projected, as you can imagine, onto the sport that right. was like the national religion.
Yeah.
What was the, do you remember the move to New York?
I do.
You like vividly?
Vivid. Well, I mean, not in super detail, but I do. I remember things vividly. Yeah.
What was the, where were you before that? And what was that switch like? You were at Santos.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was like going to Mars.
Really?
Yeah. Because like, you know, phone calls were expensive and they were, you know, my dad was making money, but they were not people who grew up with money.
Right.
So it was like calls are expensive. Talk fast. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah.
And
I'm doing very well. Thank you. Yeah, exactly.
And kids don't like, you know what I mean? I don't know. You guys, I mean, kids don't, I mean, I miss my grandmother so much, but it was a plastic thing. It wasn't my grandmother. Yeah. And it was like, say, tell her what's going on. And you're like,
no, my mother does this at the holidays. Yo, your aunt you've met twice in your life is on the phone.
Exactly.
Oh, como estamos? Oh, the cat. You know, right, like, right. What are we doing here?
And how do you explain Mars to your grandmother in Santos, Brazil, an island on the coast of São Paulo?
Yeah. There was a even that time was interesting because Pelé joining the New York Cosmos was he didn't really want to he was retired. He was brought out of retirement to play again, and I heard that the financial issues were like he was exploited essentially and didn't have the money that I think a lot of people thought he did.
No.
And the move to New York Cosmos was seemingly a way to recover some of the money
that
was
money
lost.
Right.
Yeah, it was. And it happened several times along his life, even later, you know, even before his death. And I think that, yeah, that was always an issue for him, you know, like not knowing how to handle money or not knowing how to choose the people around him.
Sure.
So, so throughout his life until the end. But yeah, he was broke basically. And he had said no before. Well, you know, he'd said after this, the second World Cup, I think, or maybe 1970, he got offers from Italy and France, right? And so Brazil didn't want to leave him to leave.
Yeah.
So they made him a national treasure, a non-exportable national treasure.
Got it. Yeah. Right? Like just like a resource.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we own him.
We're actually with the ratio to Pelé's goes away, goes to zero if you leave.
So now you can't. Now he can't go anywhere because now he's our property.
Yeah.
And so then when this happened, it's like that whole sort of, you know, amazing, like rich, extremely wealthy, white, middle-aged man in America decided he wanted soccer.
Right,
and
right, right.
Someone's like, it's Pele's the best. Who's the best? It's Pele. Go get him. You know, and he's like, they don't want to go. So he called Henry Kissinger very famously. He called the president.
And
said, go get me Pele. And they went to our president and said it would be really great which is why it's like a perfect like circle that I, you know, work in sports diplomacy, because that was like the ultimate sports diplomacy move, right?
Sure. Kissinger, someone who has never done anything wrong ever.
No, not at all.
Squeaky clean. We don't need to bring it up. We're talking about the one thing.
The one thing he did, right? The one thing he did. And and that, so he's like, the president called my dad and he's like, I think you should go.
Incredible.
That's crazy.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, at your age, you moved to New York at what age?
I was 8. So I don't, all that stuff, I don't remember. I remember.
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
But
cultural shock of New York versus the island off the coast of Sao Paulo.
In those next few years, and maybe that next decade, I mean, what is your experience in like learning kind of like, and realizing who your father is and sort of like what's going on? I know you had mentioned, I believe in a TED talk of just about coming to New York and the anonymity felt good and just not being the daughter of this very, very famous man.
Your grandmother's
man in Brazil.
Like, there's no one waiting for coffee. This is ridiculous.
So what's it like growing up with Pelé as your dad in that moment where he is not the most famous person?
Yeah, what's Pelé like walking around cash?
Well, here's the thing. I never really, I knew that he was famous or whatever that he was, but I never got to be in situations where I could see the stark difference, meaning like other kids playing, like we didn't have after school sports. I went to school and then I came home, but because I was so young, you know, after the 1970 World Cup, you know, we had some things I remember is like our windows were shot out in all our windows. We lived in a little apartment and then we moved to a big house that my dad took like 5 years to build from like the second World Cup to the we can measure and move up in homes. So from the second to the third World Cup, we built this house and we moved into it like 6 months before we moved to the US. Okay. So we only lived there for like, we went back every summer while we lived here. But, aside from like my family unit, I would go to school and come back. And so after the 1970 World Cup and even in the Brazil, the US I mean, the Brazil games or even the local Santos games, there was a lot of passion, you know, as you can imagine, in a country with such oppression, right? Mm-hmm. So all of our windows were bulletproof. And I do have my one of my first recollections in the new house was our windows being shot out.
Wow.
Right? And I knew things like that, but I wasn't thrust into the middle of crowds. I never experienced that. So I didn't know that.
Got it.
My surroundings in Santos were pretty normal. My mom would take us to the beach. We had little friends at the beach. We would go back. You know what I mean? She walked us to this place and walked us to that. I had bodyguards apparently that would go to school behind me and come back. I did not know that.
Wow.
Until I was older. These dudes are always there. Bro.
Creepy guys would follow me to school.
Yeah, well, I got fans.
Yeah, especially after the shot.
They might be the ones who shot out our windows, guys. They seem to be following me.
That's remarkable.
I didn't know. But then when we came here, it's also an age where you start becoming more independent.
Yeah.
I probably would have felt it more if I had been at that age there.
Since I was
not really independent there. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So I think it's just personality, but I love New York. I loved New York from day one.
Yeah.
From like the get-go. I loved New York.
I'm curious about you are one of seven. Your father had seven children.
Yeah, but right. There were two of us then.
Okay, yeah.
And
yeah.
Then my sister was born here, mm-hmm. and then they got divorced.
Got it. And amongst all your siblings, who's the most like, yo, but that's my dad. I tell everybody. You know what I mean? It seems like, because you seem very, very well adjusted. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's a perception that you think the children of a very famous figure could abuse that fame a little bit.
Your Instagram handle isn't I'm Pele's daughter.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
You know, we interestingly enough, my parents always, my mom especially, always raised us like that. She's like, this is not, you know, this is not your accolade.
Gotcha.
Right? And right. So not in a bad way, but in a good way. But also she would always explain to us that it was better for us if we didn't think that was our accolade, right? Then that in that way, not like, you know, get over yourself. This isn't your accolade.
Mm-hmm.
That
your own thing. Yeah. Yes,
you know.
Be your own self.
But also, yeah,
you
but also
this
it's
from
better
it.
For you. But also she was also protecting us in a way because it was dangerous, right? Not mm-hmm. dangerous, but you didn't want, you know, we had a word like when we would go places with her, we would say Mary Poppins. So you'd be going around talking in Portuguese. And when we hear a Portuguese speaker, she'd go Mary Poppins. And we would switch to English.
Oh, that's amazing. Oh.
Because she was a white woman with two kids and we had been on, you know, on in magazines and stuff like that. And we were in America. Everybody knew it was the cosmos, you know. So, so she didn't want to
That's really interesting.
I love
the school asked my mother to come up with a word in case we felt like we were in danger. And my mother was like, okay, the word is run. we're like, I don't think you get the essence of what we're trying to come up with. My mom's like, get the fuck out of there. That's the word. Okay, you're in danger.
I thought your mom's word would be queso, Alexi.
Alexi's in trouble. I didn't do anything. It's the windowless van. Why is my mom beating me in front of my kidnappers?
What is your looking at? You know, you're a New Yorker, and it's like,
you are. I feel like I don't say that because I know some people are really right. If you were not born here,
sure.
I get that.
You've been here since eight. You good?
I think I do, but I still sort of, you know.
Yeah. So you've seen New York change quite a bit. Are there things that you, I don't know, miss about what New York was like when you got here, or even what was your experience in New York, I'm sure.
Are you taking the subway?
Subway, private school? Are you like, how ingratiated are you?
So here's the cool thing about, so anyway, yes, it has changed. Mm-hmm. So I guess absolutely changed. I hate to say like, I miss, you know, when Times Square was super dirty and there were, you know, you know what I mean? Like no one misses crime. I mean, no, we all had mugger money in our shoe. You guys remember mugger money? Yeah.
That's what the fifth pocket in your jeans is for, dog.
We all had stuff like that. But, you know, nobody misses that, right? Yeah. Nobody misses going like five blocks to avoid a dark street. But there is something that's missing, right? There's something, even like, you guys are young, but I bet you even you feel like, even in the last like 5-10 years, and I'm not saying it's bad. It's all kind of Times Square now in a way. You know what I mean? It all feels kind of like,
The essence of the city has shifted.
There were things that, you know, with the danger also came like little shops that aren't there anymore, you know, like mm-hmm. the sari shop on Orchard Street, you know, that you could get like rows and rows of gorgeous Indian fabric. And it was like, you know, if you were brave enough to go down there.
There's also those stores you used to pass. You'd be like, how are they making any money? This gotta be a front. You only sell moccasins?
Yes.
But I ain't never seen one person with moccasins. You You're not even wearing moccasins and you sell moccasins. You got Jordans on. There was that. I mean, I feel like the city has become the thing that annoys me. It's like no one misses danger.
Yeah.
No one misses crime, but I miss the essence of danger. Because it's now, like some people walking around, I'm like, yo, y'all wouldn't have survived here 10 years ago.
Right. But now we have crime back, but not the good parts of the city.
I know, right? What the hell? You know, usually when the crime spikes, rent goes down. What's happening, bro? We got $4,600 one bedrooms and crime?
Yeah.
It's these algorithms, bro. there was always a certain sense of like, this is my perception of it, that it never corrupted him. That's the best way I can describe it. He always seemed like the kindness and the good deed should be the priority, even with all the fame that he might or attention he was receiving.
Yeah, he was always very grateful in general, right? And I do think that's a Brazilian thing.
Mm-hmm.
I really do. I think that's and I always say this when people talk about racism and then we talk about like the civil rights movement and you know, the state of racism and in Brazil and systemic racism, is that I really do think that it is, you know, there are nice people and not nice people in Brazil, just like everywhere else. But I think that culturally, I guess, and I guess it's culturally and maybe, I don't know, like anthropologically, I don't know, that there is this sense of gratitude that Brazilians have. You know, of like, you know, I have caipirinha in my hand. I have sand between my toes. You know, yes, the world's falling apart, or yes, I have no help, whatever, but we're going to make it another day. That is amazing for personal joy, you know, but not great for revolutions.
Right.
Right. Not great for like systemic change.
Yeah.
Right. Right? So I feel like it's not a complacency at all. It's just like, we're going to make it to tomorrow. Or we're going to be okay.
It's a joie de vivre, right?
Yeah, it is. And it's a deep gratitude. And he really was. He was grateful. I remember one of the things that I loved about him that like was for me was something that, like fuels what I do today and how I think today, is that when we moved here, people in America didn't really know football, right? Mm-hmm. And it wasn't like he was swamped. When you go to nice restaurants, you know, people would know just because they saw business stuff and, they knew who he was, whatever, right? And trendy restaurants where there was like other stars. And what he would do is like Mr. Chow was one of one of his favorites, right, to go to. So on 50-something Street. And what he would do in almost all restaurants is he would be there very late because Brazilians eat late. So we would get there like, really, really late and then stay. We were always the last people there. And then before we left, he would always ask the waiter or maitre d' to let out the kitchen staff. Because he knew those were his fans.
Yeah, of course. Wow.
And in the duration, it was I always think it was hilarious because in the duration of the meal, I don't know how, but like they all had Brazilian shirts, balls. I don't know who came from all over Queens. Right.
Someone's like,
Brooklyn.
We got it. We're gonna get to sign like, everything.
Bring me my ball.
They're
like on 7 trains getting to. And so and then we would spend like another hour there, and he would be taking pictures and signing autographs.
Amazing.
And that's incredible. That because he knew, like, and he would say he never said no to an audience. He would only do it when he was on a job, and he was like the bane of every bodyguard's existence because he didn't have really bodyguards unless they were assigned to him for insurance reasons, right? When he was doing things that he had to do. And like, he would not pass a kid without stopping. And I think he felt that was his job.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He's like, you know what I mean? I don't think it was just like, oh, I'm such a good person. He's like, this is my job. Like, my job is to, you know, if this is going to make his day, his week, whatever, like, this is my job.
That's so cool.
Incredible.
And, he had a lot of bad things. We can talk about the bad things.
We'll do that.
Don't get too mischievous. I'll come back.
Join the Patreon. We'll talk about it.
How about last question. When Freddie Adu was getting popular and they were calling him the next Pelé, were you like, nah, bro, you ain't my dad?
No, because I'm from Brazil. Like, they call everybody the next Pelé.
Okay.
You know, Endrick, Neymar, Vinny.
Endrick, all the photos early on were like, a little reminiscent of a lot of the Pelé photos. It felt like his team were kind of staging him in a way to remind people.
I didn't see that. No, I didn't see that. I feel bad that he's on the bench is what I feel about Endrick. I feel bad that he's not playing.
He's a kid.
He's a kid. Yeah, I know, but he's going
to,
you know.
See if you could pull up some
He should
of the
be
Endrick
playing
photos.
In Brazil, you know. And
Yeah.
Put up Endrick Pelé looking photos if that pops up.
I mean, these are just like the... Oh, wait.
Look, this is what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
Look at this. They did like...
I did not see this.
They like dressed... Look, the photo of him like dressed almost exactly like him coming in. And there's him being carried, which immediately... That was the first photo that popped up. Where we were like...
Is that Photoshop? Because that looks like a different...
It does look like it's Photoshop, the bottom one. But this one, I believe, is real.
That is
very real. Yeah. But like clearly they're dressing him like young Pelé.
Listen, go for it.
Good marketing, right?
Yeah.
Hey.
Could do worse.
All right.
He's so cute.
Hendrick, Enrique.
Yeah, he's a cute kid.
Both of them.
Enrique.
Yeah, right. He is, right? He looks like my brother. Yeah.
Yeah.
Incredible. Kelly, this has been
amazing.
This has been amazing. You are welcome back. I mean, we could go on for hours, but thank you so much for taking the time and joining us. I know this is
Doing like real work.
thank you guys. Stop saying the A. First of all, I'm sorry. Shout out to the shirt.
Oh, yes.
Everybody,
of course,
yeah. Everybody, yeah.
All right.
Yeah. And B, you guys do real work. Like, you have no idea what laughter, like, I mean, and this is like, that's what I'm talking about. The feeling that my dad inspired in people, the way that he could walk into a room and make people happy, it was always like huge to me, right? Like, I'm like, can you imagine if you could bottle that?
Oh my
and just
God.
Like, there's so much suffering in the world, right? Can you imagine if you could just bottle, like just always have someone who could walk into a room and make people happy? And that's what you guys do.
Damn.
We
make people laugh, right?
That like means you, a lot. You, thank
yeah.
you.
All right. Well, it's going to be a little difficult to get Alexis in a bottle, Bob.
Yeah. It's going to be a big boy bottle, Costco only. More of a bucket, but I think.
It's an absolute honor. Everybody, go follow Kelly, I guess, on Instagram. You're very active on there. I am Kelly Nascimento. Is there anything else people can follow or support? I know you. I see Hadaf Global here, but is there anything you want to give a shout out or direct people to?
No, I think that's it. I mean, I post everything there and you know, LinkedIn is kind of
it's popcorn. Yeah, exactly. Hey, Gen Z, get it.
Shouts to all the corporate updates, bro.
Exactly. All the corporate updates. Yeah. That's it. I think
honored
Instagram
to have
is
been
it.
A part of this panel. There's a lot of that.
But this has been really, really cool for us. So thank you so much.
Thank you guys.
And
this
again,
really
like I said, you're welcome back anytime. We could go for hours.
Thank you. My first comedy. I want to do more comedy podcasts.
Look at that.
Yeah, ones are so boring.
You're going to be on Rogan next.
Oh, okay. No, maybe not.
Kelly Nascimento, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Wow, thank you so much, Kelly Nascimento. Also, if you want to hear the full interview, and it's absolutely incredible, by the way, check it out on patreon.com/soccercooligans. If you're already a member, go do that right after this episode. If you're not a member, you might want to sign up because it's a pretty good one.
Get over there. Okay. So let's...
Want to talk a little Prem?
Let's talk some Prem. It was a fun little weekend.
How did Everton do? You didn't lose, buddy.
We didn't lose.
Let's go.
Okay, didn't get to... It didn't ruin my weekend.
Yo, shouts to Storm Draga or whatever. What's the Dara?
Who's that? Is that the new center back that we're signing?
Storm Drago, bro.
The Merseyside Derby was postponed. Dude, I believe it was a wind gust. They were like very... fierce wind gusts. That's what I was.
It was not safe to leave the house if you were in Liverpool. Never mind go to a stadium.
Exactly. A bummer that we don't get to see. It would have been the last Merseyside Derby at Goodison Park. And that is postponed.
It will still happen.
It will still happen.
It's
at
just
some
gonna
point.
Happen later in the week. Hopefully it happens during a week where Liverpool has a much congested schedule. You know what I mean?
I mean, it's I hope for that as well.
Yeah, we can all everybody light your
candles. A weaker Liverpool is makes it for a happier Everton.
Right. Well, hey, Liverpool doesn't play. You think Arsenal will take advantage of that?
Never.
Nah, son.
Because
couldn't be bothered.
Yeah, let's talk about a couple of these matches. There was an opportunity to gain some ground in this title race, and Arsenal did not really capitalize as much as they really should have.
Yeah, a really difficult one. But Fulham is, first of all, it was away to Fulham. Fulham is a bit of a bogey team. Also, it's filled with a lot of ex-Arsenal players. You know what I mean? There's a little inspiration there. You got Bern Leno, you got Iwobi, you got Emile Smith Rowe. So there's a little bit of additional inspiration to beat the old squad. You know what I'm saying? So... while they certainly didn't win, a draw for Arsenal feels like a little bit like a loss.
Yeah.
Dropping points in such a tight race.
Fulham, I believe in the first half, I mean, they ended up with two shots.
They made the most of what they had.
Two shots on goal. One of them was a goal. Mm-hmm. The goal from Raul Jimenez was a great goal. I thought Raya could, it was a great shot and very well placed. I thought Raya should have
at least got a hand on it.
Not even necessarily got a hand on it, but should have positioned himself probably more in the the percentages is like he will most likely go wide, right? Or I think he was trying to because Saliba was running in.
Yeah.
I think Raya's thought was like, oh, he's most likely going to go to the near post.
He's going to go near post because his angle's cut off. Exactly. To go
so
wide.
It was just like, it was a really, really well placed shot and just well done from Jimenez.
But, great shot.
But I thought Raya could have done maybe a little bit better there.
You know what? As an Arsenal fan, I will agree with you.
Yeah.
But
look,
again,
you look at these stats, 66% possession over 34.
12 shots instead of two. Four shots on target to two.
The corner, six corner. We were just talking last week about the corners.
Clean sheet on corners, bro.
But six corners and every moment, same thing happened. As soon as a corner was awarded to Arsenal, everybody was like, here goes, it's gonna happen again.
I mean, it's the only way they can score. You know, in the last 13 matches, only three of the matches that they've had, they've like accumulated at least one XG.
Okay.
Only in three of the last 13, they're just not doing well. I mean, a lot of that was with Odegaard out. They were playing super defensive, but yeah. Odegaard was in this game, you know what I mean? And you can see you're really missing a lot. Kivior is just not up to snuff defensively. There was a lot. Anthony Robinson, I thought, did a really good job on Bukayo Saka, keeping him busy, keeping him out of the game for large swaths. The goal he scores gets called offside because Gabriel Martinelli was offside.
And this is where my biggest frustration is, because I saw that and I was just like, as soon as the goal went in and as soon as they put the lines down, even before they put the lines down, I'm just looking at Martinelli and all I'm just saying is like, there's no reason for you to be offside there.
The zero. Run he makes, the pass he gets, he could be three steps behind and still get that.
He is his foot is ahead of the last defender. I'm just like
a third of his body.
It's just you're like, you don't need. I don't even understand why does the rush to get it wasn't a like you're a darting run to receive the ball. It's just it was a regular pass. So I just don't know what instinct in him told him like, oh, let me get up as much as I need to.
He's just not the same player this year. And I mean, look, the offside isn't offside, but in a game that matters, that offside could cost you the league.
Yeah.
You know, I still think it's too early to do all that, but it could in the end. Like, we could still be talking about it. I think at the end of the day, you're watching Arsenal just not be clinical in front of goal.
Without a doubt. Yeah.
It just constantly.
I mean, they did clinical. It against West Ham.
Sure. I mean, there's moments where they get it, but in a game against Fulham, you have to be like, I forgot. I think who was it? It was Alan Shearer said, great players are great 9 out of 10 games. Good players play great 6 out of 10 games. Arsenal has a lot of really good players.
Got it.
Yeah. Somewhere in between. It's like, you got to find a way to put it all together for a full 11. And I think you're also seeing not having a pure 9, which I know I've not always been on that bandwagon. I'm like, hey, if Kai Havertz can do the job, Kai Havertz can do the job. Maybe Arteta doesn't want to play with a pure 9. Maybe he wants to play more of a false 9, 9.5, whatever you want to call it. I think you're seeing without someone who's like, just give me the ball, guys. You know, we're doing a lot of passing here. Just give me the ball. Let me take a good shot. Without that, I don't think you have enough to win the league. It's going to be very difficult.
There was a moment in the game when Gabriel Jesus came in and that looping ball that got sort of stuck in the wind.
Yeah.
And he didn't make the full effort to run because he didn't think he was going to get it. And then the ball, if he just keeps running, that's probably a tap in for a goal or just something to get around the keeper or whatever. And that is like, you know, you're just talking about a sort of clinical number 9.
Someone who would make that run.
He's wearing the number 9 shirt and you would think that moment something would kick in.
Throw a 1 in front of it because my guy doesn't need to be the wearing the 9.
Yeah, it's just a disappointing result. And especially given that Liverpool didn't play and also Manchester City
drew.
And we're back to our old ways for Manchester City.
Nottingham Forest said, not today, Pep.
I mean, we're talking about these.
I hope you put lotion on your face, my guy.
Okay. Make it oily so you can't scratch yourself as much.
Yeah, you might want to get some nail clippers.
But the
Spurs-Chelsea was.
Oh, wait, no. City played Crystal Palace.
Crystal Palace, not Nottingham Forest. Nottingham Forest.
Played Manchester United, which we'll talk about that as well. But the
Crystal Palace, though, was that Kovalic?
Is that my... No, Milenkovic. Milenkovic. Oh, my God. That's a big man, dude.
So...
No, that's also Nottingham Forest.
Is that also Nottingham
Forest?
That's
also Nottingham Forest. Never mind. Who plays for Crystal Palace, goddammit?
Eze. I don't know.
Yeah. And Nketiah.
And Nketiah was there. He didn't look great in that
he
game.
He did not.
But
LaCroix was who I was thinking
but
of.
But the City got a red... This just like... It, this just, again, where there's teetering. There seems to like we talk about it week in and week out, but
they're unsure of themselves,
and which is just so weird to see. We have not in the last 8 years, 9 years, we have just not even seen them be unsure of themselves.
Pep has never had a run like this in his career.
Yeah, it's wild to kind of to witness in real time because you know what we sort of know what the problems are,
yeah.
And then it's weird that Pep can't just be like, "Yo, I'm Pep." Do the things I'm telling you to do.
Why aren't y'all listening to me, bro?
They just seem
to... I don't want it all.
You know, Pep said this in one of the, like, was it All or Nothing series or whatever? About that you, as your manager, year after year after year, almost like no matter how good you are, like, the message that you deliver doesn't really seep in to players.
You got to bounce every once in a while, right?
You got to get a little...
Or you bring in new manager, new... Like trainers around
good
you,
cop,
know
bad
I mean?
Cop. Dude, hey, he just came out of training. He was like coach in prison.
Yeah, you know exactly. Or you know what? You know, I would love to do if I was Pep. I'd be like, hey, man, I think I believe in you.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're going to get over this hump. And then you walk out of the room and the other guy's like, bro, he's lying. he was just telling us that they're thinking of selling you, bro.
Gaslight.
Yeah, dog. Put fear.
Okay.
He wants to see you react.
And it's just not resonating with these players. It's wild to see. Maybe what, you know, like we said before, like Raju was the player who kept it all together.
I can't believe people didn't think he was Ballon d'Or. Look what happens when you take him out of a squad.
Exactly. And then also
Phil Foden. I know he was ill. He was ill. But I peeped this. I didn't realize this. He's got zero goals and only one assist in the whole season.
Really? I did not realize that either. Yeah, it's not great. Which is like last year was like, we're looking at the, you know, Ballon d'Or, world class. And what happened?
Damn.
What happened, Phil?
Where you been?
The other side of Manchester.
And way, bro. Don't even want you as a dad anymore.
And real quick, the other side of Manchester. Manchester United lose again at home.
Losing Amorim, bro.
to Nottingham Forest. And
this was Milenkovic just bodying Lisandro Martinez.
Uh-huh.
Just threw an elbow into his chest and walked him, bro.
He told him, you're little.
Yeah, that's a big man, bro. By the way... All jokes aside, he would do this to me every day of the week.
Oh, nobody's. Yeah. We're not here to shame the short king that is Lisandro Martinez.
Not at all.
But I think it's something to, well, you know, when we watch Martinez play for Argentina, there's they almost collectively defend to turn whatever weaknesses that they may have, which is his height, to a strength. At
but
the
also
club level,
he can be a bit more brutal, I think, in South America.
Okay, yeah.
And you know, with actual VAR and with refs watching, he can't be as aggressive to counteract.
Because they call him the Butcher.
The Butcher.
And the Butcher shouldn't be getting dunked on.
No, man. You don't get the nickname Butcher without doing something messed up.
So it looks like at the club level, Manchester United can't. They don't really support him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, let's be for real. If a guy like Milinkovic, players like Chris Wood, are in the box in a set piece,
mm-hmm.
does Lisandro Martinez need to be the central defending zone guy? Like just based on you wouldn't do
you
that.
You can't pull your center back out.
Get
wide, buddy.
You probably should. Rashford, get in there. You know what I mean? Somebody maybe with ups or something.
I think you got a lower center of gravity. You should be able to get under that elbow. You know what I mean? Get under that elbow, my guy.
I guess we're trying to come up with some solutions.
Did you see what, going back to Fulham Arsenal, did you see what Adama Traore did to William Saliba?
No. And he
put his arms behind his back and he took a shoulder and just walked William Saliba off the pitch.
Okay.
During the first corner.
I did not see that.
Well, that's a big man. That's a very strong man.
Yeah, dude.
He literally like shoved him out of the way without using his hands. And I was like, have they figured out how to neutralize Arsenal? Of course not, because they scored. But yeah, man, if you're Manchester United, look, Ruben Amorim said, hey, the storm's coming. It's not always going to be wins. You know, mm-hmm. It's going to come a time. I got here pretty quickly.
Yeah. You would think Manchester United are, Nottingham is a team that Manchester United, especially at home, you have to favor.
They're good this year, though.
But that's the point I wanted to make. Nottingham Forest are in fifth place in the Premier League, which is, I can't.
Manchester United would beg for that right now.
Without a doubt. Ariel Helwani was on the show a couple months ago. We had a little wager. Of that, I said Everton would finish above Nottingham Forest because obviously,
it's Nottingham Forest.
Because I thought it would be close.
Yeah.
Closer.
You thought we wouldn't be stressing about it in December.
What do you mean fifth? What the hell is Nottingham Forest doing in fifth place?
Yeah.
On the Premier League table.
What's the bet about?
We hadn't decided what the actual bet was going to
be. Let's just not bring it up and maybe he forgets. You know what I mean?
But it's still, even for bragging rights. Crazy.
Fifth,
25 points this season.
Why is there no fourth in these league standings?
I think because we're looking at, I actually don't know why. I don't know. Who knows? Who cares? We're looking at Nottingham Forest. Anyway, the other game we have to make sure we discuss is Tottenham against Chelsea. This was a cracker of a game.
A great game.
Great game.
Chelsea moves into second place with this big win at Tottenham.
At Tottenham.
But here's what I'll say. This was a Tottenham loss. This was not a Chelsea win.
No, this was a huge loss for Mark Cucurella's boots, bro, because he didn't...
He chucked them joints in the bin.
He didn't show up with the right equipment.
Nah, man.
He was like, oh, let me give him a little two-goal handicap.
Yeah,
he's slipping. But credit, he did slip, right? Twice.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and it led directly to goals, which is like, it's rare to see nowadays mm-hmm. where a mistake directly leads to a goal because you always the whoever wins the ball is like, oh my god, I got the ball, and like they make a mistake because they're so excited.
They're rushing it now,
exactly,
because they want the clip. They want that clip.
But good on Tottenham for capitalizing on that
each time.
And you would have to think the injury what is it, Cuti Romero,
yeah.
His injury, he leaves fairly early in the game, and maybe this is why they end up losing. Mm-hmm. But
I think they end up losing because they gave up two penalties.
The two penalties,
two stupid defensive.
The first
plays.
One,
and this is the thing: people think Chelsea went to Tottenham Stadium and absolutely destroyed Tottenham. No, look, they gave them a game going down two goals. They said, "We're not going anywhere." I'll give them all the credit for that. Under no circumstances did they completely outplay Tottenham to the tune of three of four goals. Two of those goals were gifted to them in the form of penalties. You still got to take the penalties. You still got to score. Absolutely. Yada, yada, yada. Let's get past all that. They gave him two free goals. This, with him and Son scoring at the end, this could have very easily been a 3-2 win for Tottenham. Very easily.
Yeah. The penalty from Bissouma?
Yeah,
who was the first one? Bissouma?
I think it was Bissouma. Bissouma was the first
one. The slide tackle.
Ridiculous.
In the box. It was just the foul on...
Unnecessary.
on Caicedo. I mean, unnecessary is not even a strong enough word to describe what it was.
Yeah. What do they in Spanish? They say it's like a moment from a different game.
You're playing EAFC and you hit the slide button.
You
way
hit
too
the
early.
Wrong button. You hit the wrong button.
I couldn't... Look... Even if you think you could get the ball, you don't make that challenge.
Yeah.
That's really it. Like, you just do not.
That just doesn't belong in that space. Yeah.
Just, you try something else. You try to put a body on him. You do something. You get beat.
Yeah.
You get beat if that's what it is. The you saw it when he, as he's sliding and you're watching it in slow-mo, you're watching him side being like, what did I
he's
do?
Like, wait, we're not in the middle of the pitch right now?
It just absolutely made no sense. And it's just like, it just felt like a gift to Chelsea.
Two big gifts. Because the Pape Sarr
The other
foul
one
was so stupid.
This he's gone
as
away,
the player running out of the box.
He's running outside of the box.
You wait 2 seconds. That's a free kick.
I made no sense, and it's just something. These poor the lapses in judgment for Tottenham, which is that. I mean, Carter could speak to it more. Is this the lapses in judgment? Is that what being Spursy is? Is that
this game feels like the definition of Spursy? No.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Thank you for
That is our expert analysis from producer Carter.
We pay him a lot of money for that. That was really cool. Thank you for the insight.
It was, I can see why, I didn't see, the reaction from like Expressions, who's my go-to when I need to see.
I even watched Flex, but because he lost, he also wasn't making fun of Expressions.
Right. Right.
There was no Flex Expressions.
So this was the reaction to it, it feels like Tottenham are going into a place where even the, what was it? They were booing, was it during Europa League when they were booing Ange Postecoglou?
Yeah.
Was it the other Premier League?
It was when they played Bournemouth. They lost to Bournemouth last weekend.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're starting to get to a place where it's...
The pressure's on Ange, but I feel like for some reason the pressure's never on Daniel Levy.
Yeah, no.
He's just sitting back going like, hey, don't look at me. You know, the whole time. He's got a good gig. You've been there for a long time.
Hey,
shouts to Chelsea, man. What a season they're having. I don't think Enzo Maresca's made a misstep this entire season. He got a squad of 40 players, too many players.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He's like, all right, give me a wedding tent. Y'all go over there and train. And, you know, Raheem Sterling, you're not in my plans. He did that whole thing. He's like, I got my 23. I don't need nobody else. Conference League. Oh, I'm going to put in a separate team, a completely separate 11. And you know, Cole Palmer's not going to be registered for the tournament. And people said, yo, you're making a mistake. And now look at this. He has a team that he only has to manage one match a week and they're balling. And I'm being honest when I say this. This is for real. Take me off this screen. I want to be on ISO only when
gotcha,
I say
gotcha.
This. I got this. Todd Boehly is a better owner than Sir Jim Ratcliffe. Okay. Sir Jim Ratcliffe has fired 250 to 300 people.
Yeah,
he's fired the 40-year club historian. He fired the little old lady who was the secretary.
Well, she died.
Well, she recently, but before that, he fired her.
He had nothing to do with that.
Yeah. No, he didn't kill her, but he did fire her.
She was a very old lady.
No, but he did fire her before that. She was fired. Maybe it wasn't her. Maybe it was another secretary.
Got it.
A longtime secretary was fired.
Got it.
Was sacked. Staff is eating leftovers from the suites. They don't even get their own meals anymore.
Damn,
they don't get a box lunch anymore. They're like, yo, pick from this leftover from the suites. Here's a cold chicken finger. I don't know what happens in the suites over there. I've never been invited.
School lunch, bro.
Bro, facts. No, they're getting to pick what the rich people don't want.
Wow.
The place is falling apart. He just raised ticket prices to $66, and he goes, I was shocked to find out Fulham fans pay more than Manchester United fans. Fulham might be the most expensive, the highest earning income zip code or postal code in all of England.
Right.
Of course they're going to pay more, man. The people around there have a lot more money.
Sure.
Manchester United, he said, well, they have to pay. The fans have to pay more so we could put better, rebuild what's happening on the pitch. Now you want the fans to foot the bill for the players, not you, Mr. Moneybags, who came in talking all this lovely stuff about how much you're going to do. And then you spend so much money. You pay $3 million to get Dan Ashworth. You got this dude on 18-month gardening leave, doing nothing for 18 months. You bring him in 5 months later, less time, a third of the time that he spent on gardening leave, and you sack him. You're done. You fire him because you didn't like the guy that you told everyone was the right guy for the job.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, bruh. Todd Boehly never raised the prices on the fans. Todd Boehly went out and spent $1.5 billion. $1.5 on players. He went out and got players there that can guarantee you the success with the next few seasons. He got rid of Mauricio Pochettino, where I was like, I'm not sure that's the right move. And he went and got an even better coach in Enzo Maresca as of right now. I'm telling you, Todd Boehly is a better manager. I'm sorry, better owner. I'm going to say that again in case we edit it. Todd Boehly is a better owner than Sir Jim Ratcliffe. So talk to me again about these American owners.
Mm.
Talk to me again.
All right. Well, given the roller coaster that is, professional football,
mm-hmm.
I would imagine in a year or two, somebody's going to take that clip after Chelsea are relegated.
And well, you know what? Can we watermark the date on the bottom?
At this moment in time currently, as I hold up today's newspaper, Todd Bowley seemingly is a better owner than Sir Jim Ratcliffe. But the Dan Ashworth news is like the weirder of like, and the fact that they put out a statement saying like he's sort of parting ways and he's leaving the club. And it's like, all right, well, what did he do? Like, what happened?
Or what didn't he do?
Yeah, the fact
a lot of the stuff coming out is that he wanted Gareth Southgate to get hired instead of Ruben Amorim. Omar Barada, remember him? He used to work for City. He's like handling partnerships. They sent him to Portugal to finish the deal with Ruben Amorim instead of Dan Ashworth, your sporting director, which seemingly that's the guy who would get picked. He wanted Dan Ashworth. This is, again, it's all reporting. None of this is confirmed. But supposedly Dan Ashworth wanted someone with Premier League experience. They didn't want like a coach for the future, so to speak. He said, why don't we let's do the safe thing and bring someone in. Remember, this guy knew what he was doing at Brighton. He knew what he was doing at Newcastle. Seemingly couldn't miss. That's why you go and spend $3 million to bring him in.
Right. Yeah. This was supposed to stop.
Yeah.
This, you know, after the Glazers are left, you know, quote unquote left or whatever, there was supposed to be some stability brought into this club. And it feels like that we're not too far from the sort of the craziness and the instability that the Glazers brought on. So, it also just seems like institutional. It's like we get frustrated with the players on the pitch, but something's clearly...
Bro, everything's off.
Something's wrong.
Something don't smell right.
Yeah. So look, the where are we at with the Premier League table right now? Obviously, Liverpool
are with a game in hand and first by what, 4 points?
Six points. You gotta feel like maybe this is just a nice rested Liverpool to continue out the season. But
no,
it
is 4 points. 35-31.
Oh, Chelsea have 4 points. Six points from, I believe it's Arsenal.
Are 6 points behind.
There was an offer for Mohamed Salah. I think Liverpool made a
an open offer
2 years. We don't know. I think any of the details or whatever, but at least some improvement there because again, the more he scores,
he's crying a lot post game. He was talking. He was yipping.
Oh, okay.
I guess I'm more out than in.
When you say crying, I'm like, why is he crying?
Yeah, but you mean, know what I mean.
He's like sort of being vocal.
Crying as in like the town cry. Like he was talking. He was talking a lot.
Gotcha.
He was opening his mouth a lot about the inside stuff.
All right. So the Premier League still looks like, Chelsea are making a real case for themselves, but Liverpool still look like the favorites, at least to me right now. All right. Let's wrap up there. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Shout out to Kelly Nascimento again for joining us.
Oh, what an honor.
And a reminder. If you want to hear the full interview and get a bunch of access to other exclusive content, go to hit all the buttons. Why not?
I'm setting it up for you to say the thing.
Patreon.com/soccercooligans. Get over there right now if you want to check out the full interview. It's genuinely really, really cool and great and honored that she could join us.
So many insights too on Pele,
on the show. Make sure you follow us on our socials, especially Blue Sky at soccercooligans.com on Blue Sky and then at soccercooligans everywhere else, Instagram, YouTube, subscribe, do all your homework. We're
hit all the buttons you see.
Exactly. It's really, really important. Regardless of if they say danger or do not touch.
Hit it.
Okay.
Other than the block one.
Because it might subscribe to us. So you never
you don't know.
If you don't
you never hit the button, you don't even know what it does.
kind of absurd that you wouldn't even take that chance.
It's ridiculous.
That it could
I'm embarrassed for you.
Exactly. And shout out to everybody posting us on their Spotify Wrapped. We've been a part of
nice to see. I've shared a couple.
Top fives for a bunch of people on Spotify. So thank you again for tuning in. We appreciate it. We're going to keep bringing you more of this footy heat. Okay. All right.
If there's something to joke about, we gonna do it.
Exactly. And sign up for my OnlyFans, Footy Heat.
Hey.
Okay. People love it.
It's just pictures of my feet real close.
All right, everybody. Thank
you. Look at this bunion.
Thank you for tuning in. We'll see you on Monday?
Today's Monday.
We'll see you on Thursday, everybody. Take care, everybody. Peace.
Love you guys.